We will have three lectures, three talks in this session. Our distinguished speaker, first speaker is István Szapudi from University of Hawaii. He graduated at Eötvös University, then he went to Baltimore and he got his PhD from the Johns Hopkins University under the supervision of Sándor Szalai. And then he did several postdocs, one in Durham, and then he ended up in Hawaii, and since then he's there. And he's going to talk about cosmology and simulations. So please go.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I thank the organizers for inviting me, and it's a special honor to speak at the Wigner Conference. For many of us, Wigner was a hero, and that book that Peter Levy mentioned about symmetries and group theory, that was a very important book for me as well. So I will talk about cosmological simulations, some new ideas how to do cosmological simulations differently, and also some statistical methods to analyze those simulations and real data in the cosmos. And just to remind you, if you're starting from symmetries, we always start, I start my cosmology class with the cosmological principle, which says that the universe is homogeneous and isotropic. Of course, it doesn't mean that it's fully isotropic or fully homogeneous. There are fluctuations in it, so it's only statistically homogeneous and isotropic. But for the cosmic microwave background, these fluctuations are actually tiny, 10 to the minus 5. So the first approximation, the cosmic microwave background is uniform and anisotropic. And these anisotropies, these small anisotropies, are a direct image of an inflaton field from the very, very early universe. So those are quantum fluctuations and they are Gaussian. So this is how a spatially Gaussian distribution looks. This is almost perfectly Gaussian. However, the large-scale structure of the universe, which is from galaxies, we observe the large-scale structure, the local large-scale structure in galaxies, displays all these filaments, clusters, voids. It's very non-Gaussian, and that's because of gravitational evolution. So you can see that here the fluctuations are 10 to the 2 factor of 100. So it's like it's a 10 to the 7 increase amplification. And it's a nonlinear amplification. It's basically similar to the amplifier of Jimi Hendrix. It's not a hi-fi amplifier. It's a distorted version of the input signal that is the cosmic microwave background. So it's a distorted sound. And from that, we want to find out the properties of the early universe, which are the cosmological parameters. So basically, in our standard model of cosmology, which contains essentially dark energy, dark matter, and ordinary matter in this proportions, and of course, everybody knows this, I'm only reminding you this basic picture. So in this lambda-cesium cosmology, the growth and expansion history is what allows us to fit for the cosmological parameters, to figure out what exactly the initial conditions were. So both the growth, so the expansion history, usually we test by looking at standard candles or standard rods, you know, supernovae or baryonic oscillations. And then for the growth history, we look at the increase of structure, as I was showing in the previous slide. As we go on, the structure increases. And these upcoming surveys, and of course, Euclid just went up, and I'm a member of the Euclid collaboration. So these upcoming surveys will give us an utmost, very, very precise measurement of the structure in the universe. So we can, if we can calculate these cosmic structures from theory, then we can actually measure these cosmological parameters, then we can find out about the very early universe, the nature of inflation, and about conditions that are not accessible to us through experiments or accelerators on Earth. And the evolution of the cosmic structures, the first approximation is linear. And usually, usually we take the Fourier transform of these density fluctuations, and the amplitude of this fluctuation grows linearly. And of course, from theory, we can actually calculate this dt function based on the cosmological parameters, and vice versa. If we measure these dt functions from the data, the linear growth, then we can fit these cosmological parameters. And that's only, that's linear theory, and that's the most, that's what we understand best. You know, physicists want to linearize everything if they can, so we do the same. However, we have seen that the actual structure formation is nonlinear. It's the Jimi Hendrix amplifier, it's not the hi-fi amplifier. And you can see that the initial tiny fluctuations grow because of gravity, and they change character. So initially, it is, even though this is a different color scheme, but initially it would be very similar visually to the cosmic microwave background. And later on, you develop clusters, voids, filaments, all these nonlinear structures. And to understand these nonlinear structures, we have some limited analytical tools, but the most important tool is cosmological n-body simulations. And basically, in these n-body simulations, the first thing that we calculate is the power spectrum. So here I define the power spectrum. And interestingly, I just told you that these simulations are very nonlinear, therefore very non-Gaussian, even though the initial conditions are Gaussian. And in a Gaussian distribution, the power spectrum tells you the full story. But because of nonlinearity, the power spectrum doesn't tell you the full story. And you can see that we have a linear power spectrum originally, and first approximation, it grows on very large scales or low k's. Essentially, we see a growth. And then on high k or small scales, where the gravitational interaction is nonlinear, we see also a shape change. And I will show later that, unfortunately, in this range, the power spectrum loses a lot of information as well. So this is the range I will talk about. So the early power spectrum, the whole power spectrum contains a lot of information, and it's all linear. Later stages, it's nonlinear and you lose information. So the way to look at this structure formation is to run n-body simulations. And here I'm showing, this is a simulation with 10 to the 10 particles, the Millennium simulation. And this is from 2005. At the time, it was the state of the art. Today, we have bigger simulations, but essentially still a gold standard. It has 3,600 references. So in this talk, I will use mainly this simulation, because we used it also for a lot of our studies, and we tried to extend the usability of this relatively modest size simulation. It had to be 500 megaparsec because it's extremely high resolution. If you could, later they made 3000 megaparsec simulations, but then you lose some of the resolution. Thus, you cannot see the nonlinearities as perfectly. And in a simulation like this, exactly because its size is relatively small, you have a significant cosmic variance. And essentially for the power spectrum, if it was Gaussian, this variance would be only the usual 1/√n factor if each mode is independent or uncorrelated. All you have to do is use the square root of n. Also, we have discrete number of particles, and that causes an extra variance. That's just a Poisson noise, that's just shot noise. So if you have a simulation that's in the Gaussian regime, those two numbers, essentially describe everything. But because of non-Gaussian, you have off-diagonal elements in the covariance matrix. We call them bead coupling and super survey variance. Bead coupling means that large-scale modes are correlated to small-scale modes, which means that if you have a large wave, the amplification of the small-scale waves is essentially influenced. And super survey modes are exactly the same thing, but when you have a finite survey, for instance, there might be modes that are outside of this survey or at the size of this survey. So it's the same thing that the whole survey might behave like a universe, which has a little bit more or less material, depending whether that whole survey sits on a peak or a trough. So these are two very much related effects, but it's bead coupling if you're talking about mode correlation within a survey, and it's super survey modes if I'm talking about mode correlations outside the survey with respect in the survey. So basically, unfortunately, these nonlinear effects lower the information content of the power spectrum. And in the case of the millennium, there's a problem that the millennium itself is a very beautiful simulation. And exactly because of beauty, it's actually a rare fluctuation. And the apocryphal stories that the creator of the simulation, Fokker, has looked at like 100 initial conditions and chose the most beautiful one. But the most beautiful one is actually statistically, it's like 2 sigma or 2.5 sigma off from the typical one, which means that many of the scientific results that you get from simulation might be slightly biased. Okay, so this simulation is very balanced, and we will see why. Essentially here, you can see that the large scale modes are much smaller. So the whole simulation doesn't have any imbalance because of large scale modes. So it's really like a beautiful picture that you could put on your wall. And of course, the number of modes are scaling with k cubed. So as you go to larger and larger k's, you will have smaller and smaller fluctuations. But because of the bead coupling effect, these large scale fluctuations also affect the small scale statistics. So that brings us to cosmic variance in simulations. Of course, people have been knowing for a long time that one simulation, especially if it's only 500 megaparsec size, has a variance. And the simplest way of getting rid of that variance is to run a lot of simulation. Now, this was the biggest simulation at the time. Today, you could run maybe dozens of simulations like this, but you couldn't run tens of thousands of simulations of this size. So that's a method that is very difficult, very costly. Another idea is the paired simulation. I don't know what happened, but I just pushed the same button as before. Could you put it back? Yeah, thank you. So if you change the phases, I told you that there are Fourier phases in the initial condition. If you change the phases by 180 degrees, then voids become clusters, clusters become voids. So it's in some sense, it's a complementary simulation. But if you change the phases, you don't change the power spectrum at all. So if you have a power spectrum that is very, that is because the power spectrum is basically the square of the modes. So with this, you actually don't change the power spectrum at all. So it looks like it's a good thing, but it's not enough. There's the paired fixed simulations where the power spectrum is not coming from statistical fluctuations, but it's the perfect power spectrum that you would never have in reality. So that's a very, very unlikely, it's a very unlikely realization, but you can ensure that the power spectrum will be exactly perfect. So the fixed paired method is the one method that was proposed before to avoid these problems. And it has two problems, really. One is that a fixed power spectrum is completely unlikely. It's impossible statistically. And secondly, if you already have a simulation like the millennium, you would like to have another simulation that complements it so you can get a good statistics from it. And this is the problem that we solved. Essentially, we just created a target power spectrum. The target power spectrum is the statistically average power spectrum from, say, thousands of simulations. And then we created a complementary power spectrum that exactly gives the target power spectrum if I average it with the observed power spectrum. And then we also use this, this shift. And actually, in our paper, we systematically tried all different methods, and we found that this is actually the best method that gives you a statistically possible simulation, and it gives you the two simulations together will give you smaller variance. And you can see how this looks in terms of the power spectrum. You can see that whenever the Millennium simulation had a low power spectrum, this simulation will have a higher power spectrum. So if you like, we had to balance beauty with a little bit of ugliness. You know, this simulation is kind of unbalanced, so it would balance statistically the beauty of the original simulation. And if you look at the actual simulation, it's not too bad, but you can see that simulation, the new, which we call the anti-millennium, you know, millennium bar. So that simulation, you know, I don't know why this doing that. So basically that simulation is essentially, you know, it has a little bit of more large scale modes, and you can see that it's a little bit more unbalanced. You know, if Pollack was painting one of the simulations, he would probably do the left one, not the right one. But it's still kind of beautiful. And we actually, it turns out that because it was from 2005, we had to rerun both simulations because there was like a 0.1% difference between the codes, but that's kind of detail. And if you look at it more in more detail, just the middle of the simulations, you can see that essentially you can see what the flipping of the phases does. You can see that where there is a big positive fluctuation in one simulation, you will have a void in the other one, and so forth. So these dark matter fields in this complementary pair are perfectly balanced. And you can see that in the power spectrum for all z, from high to z equals zero is today, essentially, you can see the red points are essentially very, very close to the average when we average the two simulations together, but individually they have huge fluctuations. And similarly, you can see the power spectrum. This is the same power spectrum, but it's measured. We can achieve from just two simulations, you know, a very, very, you know, sub-percent error, which is important when we measure these, when we measure cosmology in these new data sets. And finally, you can see the baryonic oscillations. You can see that the individual blue and yellow points are fluctuating all over the place, but the red points magically give you back the baryonic oscillations, and the size of these baryonic oscillations is one of the most important standard rods with which we can actually constrain expansion history of the universe, because we know the size of these, you know, the size of these scales comes from the sound horizon from the early universe. So this is one method that we invented. Another one was also has to do with symmetries, and that was replacing periodic boundary conditions with something else. The problem with n-body simulation is that we want to essentially simulate the whole universe, which is infinite, in a finite computer. And it used to be solved. And since the 50s, all cosmological simulations have solved this using essentially periodic boundary conditions. Can you redo it? I don't know why. Okay. So basically, just repeat the same thing over and over, you know, like this, 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 and so forth. I'll repeat it infinitely many times. Another way to think about it, that this is a torus topology. And then you can pretend that you are actually simulating an infinite universe. But one interesting thing that is, even simulators are not fully aware, is that you don't really have a 1 over r squared Newtonian law, because essentially you can see that you have to take into account the force on this particle depends on all these other particles. That's called the Ewald summation in solid state physics, but we have the same thing here. So essentially you have something, a much more complicated Newtonian law. So you don't have, you know, the real Newtonian law. And, you know, I'm not even talking about GR, these are Newtonian simulations, but on the scales that we are looking at them, Newtonian simulations are perfectly fine. So we took a page from string theory and we used the compactifying map. So instead of, you know, imagine, you know, the simplest possible map is the stereographic projection. You can see that an infinite plane or an infinite line, you can compactify on the sphere. You know, and when you go to higher dimensions, you know, like I can draw it in two dimensions, I cannot draw it in three dimensions. But essentially, the simplest solution is to only compactify the R. So you can basically have the angles. And then you just compactify the distance to object. In this way, essentially, you can create a finite simulation. Of course, there's no free lunch. The resolution under the sphere can be very high, but as you go to higher and higher, you know, in this map, you know, the red lines, you know, you have to move a lot on the plane to move a little bit on the sphere. So your resolution will actually become less good. And you can see that in this picture, it is a uniform map of particles in this compactified case. And what we have to do, because the universe has, you know, two first approximation and average density, each of these particles, as we go further and further away, have to have bigger and bigger mass. And in this map, the bigger mass is with a bigger point. So you can see, and then of course, outside the sphere, everything outside the sphere corresponds to a pixel that is around the north pole of the projection. So that one pixel on the sphere has actually an infinite volume and an average density, right? So in principle, we are mapping the infinite universe into the finite memory of the computer, but in reality, there is one pixel in our map that has infinite infinite volume, but average density, because we are totally averaging that out. And basically what happens in that case, that we have to introduce a force from that pixel that balances out the whole simulation. And remember, this is an infinite Newtonian universe. So of course you could do this in GR if you could do a GR simulation like this if you wanted to. And the simplest implementation we could find, I don't want to go into much details, but basically we created a compactified initial conditions and we decompactified it just like in the previous map. And this decompactified simulation could be run with traditional simulation techniques. Essentially the force is the same as the normal Newtonian force, except you have an extra term from that one pixel that balances out the whole universe. And another interesting thing, you know, this would be the usual force in a usual simulation. This is the Hubble drag, this is the Newtonian force. This is actually the reason for that final pixel. But we can actually also run our simulation in physical Cartesian coordinates, where the universe, the expansion of the universe is simply the initial condition. We just give the particles a velocity and the universe will expand as it should. In that case, we don't even have to solve Friedmann equation why we do in a normal co-moving simulation, because for these AT terms, you have to solve Friedmann equation. In this case, all we have to do is give the particle the right velocity, and then the universe will expand exactly according to the Friedmann equation. So the Friedmann equation is valid in the Newtonian cosmology. That's Newton's biggest blunder. You know, Einstein has his biggest blunder, which is Lambda Newton could have discovered actually this universe. He could have derived Friedman equation from Newton's equations. But of course, at the time, that was not possible. And we can not only run physical Cartesian coordinates, but we can even run rotating simulations. So we can do rotating cosmologies, which is one of our new projects. Everything in the universe rotates. Why wouldn't the universe? You know, nobody ever assumes, we implicitly assume Mach's principle, despite the fact that GR is kind of the opposite of Mach's principle. We say, you know, we have a local G mu nu that has nothing to do with the distant quasars or stars. So that's an implicit assumption in almost all cosmology. And now let's say we want to calculate the power spectrum in this depth simulation. You can see that the actual simulations after we finish have a huge resolution in the middle. And again, this is yet again, we re-simulated the millennium, but we're changing resolution. And in the middle, we can have a huge resolution, but as we go further and further out, we still have fluctuations, but at a much, much lower resolution. This normally would be called a zoom-in simulation, but actual other simulators do. They usually run a big simulation, then they rerun it at high resolution middle, and they do sometimes 17 steps. They run the same simulation 17 times to increase the resolution. We can do this in one go, if you like. And then we calculate the large-scale power spectrum from this large volume, and then we calculate the small-scale power spectrum just from the middle, which you can see, this is the middle. So we have essentially millennium resolution in the middle, and we can calculate the power spectrum. There are some technical details that we have to take into account, the average density, essentially the super survey modes, because for this little middle, we have fluctuations on the scale of this high resolution region, but we know what that fluctuation is because we have the whole universe simulated. And we found that if we run quartets or phase shifts, in other words, we do 90 degree phase shifts, these are four 90 degree phase shifts, then we can get utmost accuracy for the power spectrum. And you can see an example that we just essentially 1 million part or 2 million particles, we could recover the power spectrum of a 10 to the 9 particle gadget simulation extremely well. And you can see that the gadget simulation took 36,000 hours and this took 60 hours. So this is what this technique is gaining you. So of course, if you have simulations, you want to do something with it. And so far, I only talked about the power spectrum. The power spectrum is the most important, most ubiquitous statistics. And for the cosmic microwave background, which is Gaussian, that's all you need, really. Everything, all cosmological parameters from the cosmic microwave background come from the power spectrum. We have seen that these simulations produce all these non-Gaussian features, clusters, filaments, voids. So you have to go beyond the power spectrum statistics. And of course you would think, okay, but you have k cube number of modes. So as you go to larger and larger scales, maybe you lose some information, but there's so much information in this high resolution small survey that you could maybe fit cosmological parameters just from that. The bad news is that unfortunately, the bad news is that the high k's in the power spectrum contain little or no information exactly because of the covariance of the high k modes with the low k modes that I already talked about. That's because of nonlinearity. And of course, these two effects, beat coupling and the super survey modes, somewhat cancel each other, basically because if you have a rare cluster coming into your small survey, the average density is also biased. So when you calculate delta, you divide with that. So on one hand, delta is boosted, but the average density is also larger. So there is some cancellation that helps you a little bit. But in the end, as you go to larger case, you lose information because of these covariances. And the standard solution is add higher the statistics. So usually multi-point moments or third, fourth, and so forth moments. The problem is that higher or the moments contain a small fraction of the available information, and they come at an exponentially large computational cost. Okay, thank you. So the exponential computational cost comes from the fact that if you calculate n point correlation function, you have to do n, each point, you have to look at n times. So if you have, k point statistics with n point, that's n to the k. So n squared for the 2-point function is okay. If you do Fourier transform, you can go to n log n. But if you go to higher and higher k with some Fourier transform, you can get like n to the k minus 1 log n. But that's very, very prohibitive computationally. And usually, you know, what I'm proposing is alternatives, which is sufficient statistics, which I will define in a moment, the density PDF, which is one standard, the probability distribution function of the density is very complementary to the power spectrum. And the most recent technique that we developed is indicator function. So first, let's understand the physics. Why is the power spectrum not containing information? So this is the initial condition, and you can see it's kind of similar to the CMB, at least visually. You know, you have these hot and cold spots. And this is an actual simulation from that initial condition. You never see a simulation like this because people, you always plot the log for visual reason, but the power spectrum measures this. So the power spectrum loses most of the information because it's sensitive to the highest peaks, and it doesn't contain any of this beautiful information that simulators always show, and then they calculate the power spectrum, which is essentially like this. So if you just take the log, and this is what the first, you know, we first experimented with log and Gaussianization, which is very similar to the log. Distribution is actually close to log normal, so Gaussianizing or taking the log normal is kind of similar statistically. But just from this physical insight, we realized that you can get a lot more just from taking the log of the distribution. Of course, people are a little bit worried about that because it's a nonlinear transformation. Having said that, it works. And then later we digged out with my damn postdoc Julien Caron, we digged out a statistical method called sufficient statistics. And with some complicated calculation that I don't want to show, we have shown that actually the log transform here through successive approximations is actually a very good approximation to the sufficient statistics. And in this case, sufficient statistics has three different meanings. It is an optimal statistic. It is constructed from statistical, you know, mathematical statistics that it extracts all information for a cosmological parameter. It approximately recovers the linear density, not perfectly, but approximately, because the initial linear density contains all the information. And also, it Gaussianizes approximate distribution because the initial conditions were Gaussian, but Gaussian distributions have the best kind of statistical properties. And we actually have shown this again in the Millennium simulation that, you know, if you take sufficient statistics, you gain many orders of magnitude in information. If you just add, for instance, the third moment to the second moment, you gain a little bit, but not a lot. And finally, I must add that to actually translate all these ideas to cosmological parameters, you have to have a perfect prediction of these statistics. And of course, power spectra are predicted very well with our present cosmology toolkit. And we had to develop the same thing for the log power spectrum. But it turns out we could do it. So now we can predict the log power spectrum extremely accurately. Moreover, the alternative statistic to both power spectrum and log power spectra is the probability distribution function. And you can see this is theory and measurement in simulation. Again, the Millennium simulation, which is the example for all my talk today, we can perfectly predict in these very nonlinear scales the PDF distribution, which means that if we measure it in galaxy survey, we can analyze it. But then how could we have a statistic that that has all these properties, but it's even simpler. And we came up with this thing called indicator function, which is essentially the grand unified theory of all these statistics that I talked about. And again, the physical idea is very simple. Imagine if you're hiking, imagine a contour map of the situation of the terrain. You might have a contour, you know, like 5,000 meters to 5,500 meters and so forth. So each contour is a different elevation. And imagine that I'm creating the same elevation contour map, but in 3D for the density field. And this is an example. You have here these contours with different colors. So from this original density map, I create as many elevation maps, and we call it indicator function because I put one if a pixel is in that elevation and zero for everything else. So I'm essentially creating a lot, you know, like if I have 30 bins, I create 30 maps from this original map. And then with the same program, with the same code that I used before for the power spectrum, I calculate all the cross power spectra of all these. Now you can see that the average density in each of these maps is the PDF, is the probability distribution, because the probability that a pixel is in that map is exactly the same. Then the cross correlation, the cross power spectra, can actually recover the power spectrum, because all we have to do is weight with delta each map, which belongs to that particular bin. But it also recovers the log power spectrum, because we can weight it with log one plus delta, and then we have the log power spectrum. Or if you come up with your favorite statistic, you can just re-weight it from this. So this thought experiment shows that this contains all the information that you can imagine. And I don't want to go into details. From log normal theory, we can actually calculate this power spectra. And mainly, the most important thing is their amplitude. And it's not showing very well, but there's an X here, which uses the actual power spectrum of the millennium, because the millennium power spectrum is too low. And if you use the average power spectrum, you get a little bit low result. But if you use the measured power spectrum of the millennium, you can perfectly recover the information, except near the average of the logarithm field, which contains very low. In any case, it contains almost no information. And the reason for this singularity is that the bias depends on nu, which is the average divided by the variance. And at the average, this nu is zero. So even though the physics is linear, the bias is zero. So you have to go to higher order moments. And you can see that second order does already a better description, and you could go to higher order, but this is not an important region because it doesn't have, at the average, you have the least information. In the tail is where you have, you know, log P is essentially the statistical information. So the higher peaks you go, the more information you have. And thus we have now a model, a very simple model for the spectra, which is essentially linear plus a constant, which we can calculate. And then you can see, again, it seems like an almost impossible task, but we could predict all these power spectra, these hundreds of power spectra. And the most important thing is that now we can extend the linear regime hugely. All we have to do is just choose some levels which are still linear. So clearly, at the very high peaks, the physics is nonlinear, so we cannot go there. Around the average, the bias is nonlinear, so we cannot go there. But there is a huge range here where we can go much further and extract a lot more information from data. And I think I leave out the covariance matrices, but it's a beautiful calculation because I could actually calculate all the covariance of all these levels analytically. And from that, I could construct an optimal estimator with, you know, the C minus one weighting and so forth. And the summary of the indicator power spectrum is the following. They repackage and slice the available information. This is kind of a general, you know, grand unified theory of statistics. And we have a precise theory of predictor, so we can use them for cosmological parameter estimation. We can extend the linear theory up to k equals 0.3. It's a factor of 3. and the information grows with the cube. So that's like a factor of 30 more information. That's like you have a $1 billion survey. Now you have 30 times the volume of your original survey. So it's like you increase the dollar to information ratio by a factor of 30. We have now recently, I calculated the analytical expression for the covariance matrix, so we can do essentially an optimal estimator. And you know, this we haven't yet done much work on the bias and redshift distortions, which is important for practical applications, but that's the future. And I go back, I also talked about two embedded simulation methods. One of them was the STAPS method, which is essentially compactifying a simulation instead of periodic boundary conditions. And it has all these properties, and it's very efficient compared to normal simulations. And the complementary original pair, if you give me a simulation, I can run a complementary simulation that the two together will be as accurate as 2,000 simulations. So it, again, it is basically a huge gain when you want to, you know, like for instance, the Euclid has the world's biggest simulation, the Euclid flagship simulation for one model for the concordance cosmology. But of course, Euclid want to test all these other models, new physics. We want to find new physics. We have to figure out what would happen in this new physics. So for all these new physics, Gabor Rath, my collaborator and former student, runs pairs of these simulations, like essentially maybe 100 pairs of different kinds of models, so we can actually have a library of all the different alternative gravity neutrinos, all the possibilities there are variations on the Lambda CDM concordance cosmology model. So I finish here, and
thank you very much. We have time for one or two questions, Janos.
Yeah, please. Okay.
Peter.
A question. This is the simulation of dark matter that yes. We don't see. And moreover, we cannot identify.
Yeah.
Therefore, alternative gravities are somehow suggesting to simulate or in exchange of dark matter,
yeah,
different gravitation laws. Most of them, for example, interpolate with 1 over R kind of force law to 1 over R square or Yukawa corrections.
Yeah.
How complicated could be to exchange the classical Newtonian law of force with a more complicated?
I mean, those examples that you mentioned are kind of trivial because you know we truly use just the 1 over R square laws in our simulation. So if you want to use like a Yukawa cutoff, you just, you know, literally one line. So you could use the exact same simulation, and I think it would be easier because the cutoff means that you become more accurate. So that particular example is easy, but we have a whole library of simulations with alternative, you know, FR gravities and all kinds of, you know, GR extension motivated alternative gravities where they find out the Newtonian limit, and then these simulations or produce slightly different results. Obviously, the concordance model is so successful that we can only do kind of things that are relatively close to the concordance model, because everything that is completely funky or different or crazy, that's already excluded. So.
Thank you. Janos.
Newtonian physics is appropriate here, but can you explain why we don't have to worry about making instantaneous interaction over a very big distance of a billion light years?
Yeah, so I think what I would say to that is the same that, you know, people say the same thing even for the solar system, right? That if you look at the sun and the earth, you know, there's an 8-minute delay. So, but it turns out that that the Newtonian gravity without this eight, if you put in this 8-minute time delay into a solar system simulation, it will completely blow up. I mean, it will, you know, like planets will fly all over the place and it blows up. So the Newtonian, it is the right Newtonian limit of GR. It has been shown. essentially, I think it has to do with, like, you know, that the limit has to be done in the Lagrangian and not in the case of the not at the level of equations of motion. So basically, the right limit of GR for the solar system is the instantaneous Newtonian force, and extending that result, you know, that famous result, is true that for also the Newtonian simulation is the right limit of a GR simulation. The problem is really where, once, you know, because I'm doing infinite universe, once we are approaching, you know, the Hubble scale, you know, you start to have, you know, that scale, you do have in principle GR effects, and we don't take that into account. There are simulations which, for instance, do perturbative GR at very large scales, and then they go to smaller scales. And these Newton simulations, for instance, might not correctly take into account back reaction effects. We know that the inhomogeneities could in principle change the expansion of the universe, which we calculate from a perfectly homogeneous case. We know that the back reaction effect is real in GR. We don't know its magnitude. It's still debated. In fact, we have shown numerically, and I calculated the magnitude of Newtonian back reaction, and it is negligible. As you go to larger and larger scales, the back reaction in Newtonian physics appears to be negligible. And some people say that because of that, it shouldn't be the case for GR. However, with István Csabai and Gábor, we have our own back reaction model called AVIRA, where all we do is we change the average, the order of averaging and calculating the Friedmann equation in a simulation. And in that case, we get something that is eerily resembling to lambda CDM. We essentially almost get the same thing, except we don't have the Hubble constant puzzle, and we don't have, you know, it solves actually like three other puzzles as well. And we only thought about this as a toy model because it's, you know, when I talk to GR people, they say that this is not even a zeroth order approximation to GR. This is really based on just physical insight that a void, for instance, expands as if it was a universe that has less matter, and a cluster actually expands slower because it has more mass. It expands like, it's called a separate universe hypothesis, which is true in GR and in Newtonian physics. So we apply this and we averaged the expansion rate. And of course in GR, everything would be squishy and, you know, some void would essentially create volume and so forth. And the final result will be a true GR simulation. But having said that, the steps idea would also work for GR. But when I talk to people who are doing GR simulations, everything is so complicated already. They use this thing called the Cocktus framework, where they plug in different ideas, that it would be so much programming that it's unlikely that in the near future somebody would actually do it. Hopefully this is a good answer. So,
thank you very much for the exhaustive answer. And then let's not endanger the launch.
I don't think 4 and thousands of simulators just filled with the low fitting. But the millennium next generation and the density distribution does give back the theory.
I suggest to answer this question in the lunch break.
Okay, I didn't hear it well, so I can yes. I will answer it in the
So thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Oh, thank you.
Fine.
All right. Cool. Awesome. Thank you.